Today is Sunday, November 20th, 2022, and once again it's a sad day. Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, my student, the president of Yeshiva University, lost his father, Ted Berman. The funeral is a little later today. From what I understand, the bus is leaving from here at 11 o'clock. In relation to all that I've said about Kohelet and my age, and every day there's bad news. So a Talmud listening, Rabbi Moshe Katz, sent me a good vort that when Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky eulogized the Mashgiach of the Yeshiva, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessin, who I have a special smicha from, so he remembered Rabbi Yaakov saying, "I'm now in the matzav of a Yevater Yaakov Levado," that all his contemporaries are going and he's left alone. I'll add to this that Reb Yaakov and Reb Lessin, what was the relationship? So let me tell you what the relationship was. And I say it very briefly. I've spoken about this many times over the last 50 plus years that I've been teaching in Israel. And Reb Chaim's shita destroyed the Lithuanian ability to paskin. I had many Rebbeim who were all Litvakin and Reb Chaim and studied with Reb Velvel and Brisk, and they couldn't paskin. I'm a nobody, and I can paskin better than they could. In other words, at my age, after many years of learning, believe me, I can paskin. And I saw it was a result of Reb Chaim. Anyway, I'm not the first to say this. It was said long ago. So when Slabodka, when Reb Chaim's shita conquered Slabodka, by the end of World War I, it was obvious that Reb Chaim had won out. The Alt of Slabodka saw that no one's going to know how to paskin. So he organized a kollel for Hora'ah. And Rav Lessin, who was then a shtat rav, I believe he was older than Reb Yaakov, he already was a shtat rav. He was involved in supporting this kollel. He raised funds. Ultimately, that saved his life. I don't know if you're aware that when World War II broke out, he was in Switzerland fundraising. And because he was in Switzerland, he was able to get to the United States. Of course, his son-in-law was Rav Avigdor Miller, who was married to his daughter, who was an American citizen. And he saved his life. There were a few of his sons were there. His wife and other children perished in the Holocaust. His wife in America was already a Zivik Sheni. She was a survivor and he was a survivor. And Reb Yaakov studied in the Kollel HaHorah. So that's why he was always Makor Tova to Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessin, the Mashgiach of YU. And that's the relationship. And those are beautiful words that Reb Yaakov said. It comforts me. On the other hand, he says, at the same time, in a lighter note, someone told Rav Yaakov, "Ad mea v'yesrim." His response, "With inflation, what's 120 today?" Okay. Now, I just want to mention a few things. I don't know if Rabbi Grinstein is on, but he'll hear it later. He sent me, Yom and I've had a hard time trying to figure this one out. A cherem came out against a new chumash called Pshuto Shel Mikra. And I thought at first Pshuto Shel Mikra was Rav Kupperman. No, we looked it up, and sure enough, there's a Pshuto Shel Mikra, which has many haskamot, including from the Beitin of the Eid HaRedet. And here, a whole letter came out, Pasquaila, I think it appeared on Yeshiva World News, Gilui Dak, the whole Lakewood crowd, Rabbi Yeruchim Elshin, and I don't want to mention all the names, but a good 10, 12 signatures. And I look at the signatures, I see many of these same signatures were the ones that put Rabbi Nassim Kamenetsky also in Idui with making of a Gadol. And we printed it out, what was available in sample, and I went through it on Shabbos And I have to say, I can't believe they would. It's fabulous. First of all, Mikra, it translates the Chumash into modern Hebrew for the Israeli kids. Secondly, it gives Pshuton Shel Mikra, gives Pshat. Each, whatever they cite, they give you the source, the Ramban, the Netziv, the Sefarno, etc., etc. Also, they deal with Rashi and give you the Pshat and Rashi. Every Rashi is explained. So this is beyond my comprehension, with all due respect to Rabbi Wachtvogel and Rabbi Olshin and the other signatories.
Maybe it's a different one.
Maybe it's a different Chumash. So we went online. The only Chumash we found, Shutol Shel Mikra, was this Chumash. If anyone knows what this Cheirim is referring to, I'd be very happy, because to say that there's anything wrong with what we printed out, Chas v'chalila, Torah Hashem Tamima is 100% online. I also want to mention, in relation to Shurim I gave years ago on the Erev, so my dear Talmud, Rav Nachum Shmaiel, I think it's called Zionets, it's pronounced, if I'm not mistaken. Zayats. I don't know, I read it Sajak, but Zayats, his father of Shmuel, who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham, just put out a whole addendum to the Erev question, and dealing with the problem we dealt with in class, what was the Rebbe's real attitude towards the Erev? We're talking about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And we know that he, according to what the facts that reach us, that he okayed their building an Erev in Australia, as long as they don't tell anyone that there's an Erev. In other words, it's being done, that if people do carry, at least Yeshma al-Smoch. And Rabbi Zayats has a whole new edition trying to explain the Rebbe and the Rebbe's position. All right. I also want to mention that we got involved in a whole discussion. Rabbi Grunstein, my dear student, son of a student, whole question of going into a conservative temple. So I have to tell you that one of the incidents that came up was a story that Rabbi Finkelstein told me. George Finkelstein told me the story 30 years ago. He evidently told it to Rav Heschel Schechter, of course. Rav Heschel quotes it as well, and I've quoted it quite a few times. And this is when Rabbi Finkelstein ran the high school, MTA. So a kid came over to him, and the kid confided in him. He has a real problem. What essentially is the problem? What's essentially the problem? He's going home for Pesach. His father is a Reform rabbi, and he doesn't know what to do about going to the temple. So Rabbi Finkelstein made an appointment with the Rav in his apartment and took the kid to meet the Rav. And the Rav told him, "Bezeh halashon, your father is enabling you to become a Torah Jew. He spends money on tuition. He supports you. Do nothing to embarrass him. When you go home for Pesach, you daven in the house. Go to the temple. You can say Tehillim and stand up when everyone else stands up. Sit down when everyone else sits down." So this is what Rabbi Finkel told me years ago, and I'm not the only one that quotes it. The only difference between my version and Reb Heschel's version is he tells it about a conservative temple. I remember Reform. Anyway, Rabbi Finkelstein was contacted, and he doesn't remember the story at all. So I want you to know that I spoke with him on Friday, and I told him word by word, "I can only know this because you told this to me about 30 years ago in North Miami Beach, when I was the guest in your home in North Miami Beach, when you were principal of the day school." So I stand on this. Regarding the shaila of going into a conservative temple, of speaking a rabbi, etc., it's a delicate question. The answer has to be given in the contents of the circumstances where the question is asked. It could be if there was a hesped in the conservative temple and Yomo went in, there's nothing wrong with it. Who not? With all due respect to Yomo, he's not an international personality. But the Rav stood outside when his dear friend Rabbi Shubo, the rabbi of a conservative temple, the Rav would not go in. And you have to understand, because everyone would say, Rabbi Soloveitchik entered a conservative temple. It's a very delicate question. It depends what, when, where. Okay, Adkan. Now, let me go further. And talking about the tshuva that we're dealing with, of the jail, so there's a fabulous correspondence I have from my student, Dr. Stephen Collender, an oral surgeon, good friend of the late Normie Gold, my student, dear student, Alava Shalom. Many years ago, my brother went to visit a friend up there in Ottersville, called the Yeshiva in quotes, white-collar criminal. My brother hadn't seen him in a few years. When he got there, he was surprised to see that his buddy was now sporting a long beard. He told my brother that when he arrived in Ottersville, he had forgotten or wasn't allowed to bring in his Norelco, and all they had in the commissary were razors. Obviously, since he wasn't allowed to use a razor, he grew a beard. By the time he was able to procure an electric shaver, he decided against it, since everyone had a beard, and having a beard made him feel like one of the boys, quote, end quote. What's even funnier was that on his first day there, he was required to go to the commissary and procure sweats. There was a plethora of orange sweatshirts and sweatpants, but only a small amount of gray sweats. When he asked why, he was told that the grays go very quickly because they are, the guy said, quote, big day Shabbos, end quote. His friend also took him to see the sukkah in Ottersville. My brother said that he marveled at the magnificent sukkah. He was told that when they requested a sukkah, they were told that the request would have to be put through channels. And it was finally approved, none other than the Army Corps of Engineers came and erected it under the tutelage and guidance of the prison chaplain. So this just reinforces our impressions of Ottersville. And I'll tell you a sad joke that I was told. I was in Shabbat for Lawrence, and there was a kiddush being given. It was someone came home, we'll put it that way. So someone told me, they said, in Lawrence, there's always a kiddush on Shabbat. It's either someone going, saying goodbye, or someone coming, saying hello. All right, I hope it's not true today, but I know some stories of people I even know, why you graduates, etc. Okay. Now, another interesting letter from Naftali Schnell from Lakewood. We were talking about they want a mikveh. Remember, among the other things that Reb Menashe Klein is writing about, the importance of going to mikveh. So we asked the question, everyone goes to mikveh every day, and I don't have to tell you, anyone who knows halacha, how do you go to mikveh, wash your whole body? So Reb Moshe was asked the same question, and he answered, thousands of Jews gain in mikvah Shabbos, frekt nicht ob min meg gain, frekt via ze min meg min gain. And this is Reb Moshe, and this is Reb Moshe, truth of Reb Moshe, and I've said this many times, if Jews do something on Shabbos, if Hasidim and thousands of Hasidim, tens of thousands, go to mikvah on Shabbos, and right here, next door on the campus of Machon Lev, there's a mikvah for the Hasidish students. So don't ask whether mikvah's mutter. Ask how you can go to mikvah on Shabbos in the proper way that it's Shabbostic. And this is exactly what Reb Moshe told my Talmud, who's still is debating with me and dueling with me on the beard issue. Reb Moshe said, I can't give us coming to your sefer. So many Litvisha younger men in Rotten and Slabotka and Mir, etc., shaved, and I can quote Rakefet, who listed out all his Rebbeim from 7th grade on, and all the way from Reb Gershon Yankelevich two Mori Rebbe Hamufak, the Rav, Yad Va'ad Baklal, every last Rebbe I had shaved. So you can't ask if and this is the Gemara, I quoted to you many times, the Gemara in Brachot, Daf Mem Dalet, Amid Hey, Mem Dalet, Amid Bet, continues Mem Hey, Amid Aleph, Fukhazim May Amad Dava. If you want to see what the practice is, what bracha to make, etc., see what the people are doing. And that's the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Samech Vav, Amid Aleph. Also, Im Lo Neviim Heim, B'nei Neviim Heim. So, all right, I would readily agree with my dear Talmud, Rabbi Weiner, that maybe having a beard is a madrega, but you can't say everyone has to have a beard l'chatchila, and particularly a person like myself grew up in a time warp. The greatest Talmud Chacham I knew was Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. With Rabbi Aaron not here, it's not the same world for me. And I don't believe I ever saw him with the beard, you follow? So halacha l'maisa, I stand my ground. But this is Reb Meisha, and it's a very poignant lesson for us. There's all right, the hidda mitzvah, chumrah, let it be. But meyika hadin, we have to paskin meyika hadin. Now, this tshuva by Reb Menashe Klein, Mishnah Halachat, Chelet Yud Gimel, Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel, and Reb Menashe Klein doesn't let up. He continues with Siman Kuf Lamed Dalid, and once again, he stresses how important it is. He has to have Chavruta, and the only way you can learn Torah, and Torah is the most important factor of all, they have to allow him to have Chavruta, they have to allow him to have visitors in jail. And here he speaks about how can you learn Torah in jail if the TV is on and all types of nivul peh, the way people speak, and who knows what you're watching on TV. And remember, this tshuva is written 1996. It's not as bad as it is today, but if anyone wants to devote 100 hours and do a survey, look up old movies before 1950. You will see they're censored. There's no premarital sex. I mean, this is, you can't even comprehend this today. Nope, today no one gets married. Everyone lives, you know, all right then, they decide to have kids. So that, as I've said, they've taken the sex out of sex. This is a very serious charge against the retrogressive world. We were kids growing up. Sex was something special. You looked up to it. Rebbeim, Kedusha, Betara, and it bonded a young couple that were totally innocent. It's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Chafbet, Eini Shakoreit, Betalal Bala. This is an amazing feeling. I mean, I have to tell you, when the Gemara, same Gemara I just quoted, God forbid a spouse dies, it's Churban HaBayit. I'm quoting the Gemara, Churban Beit HaMikdash. No one has that feeling. If you're not a Torah Jew today, no one has that feeling. It's totally lost. Sex is like restaurants. You choose that restaurant, you read it. God have mercy. They took the sex out of sex, turned it into a total animal act, a biological act, nothing to do with Kedusha, with Tara, with marriage, with the secret of life, of children, of family, of continuity, of devotion, of commitment, etc. Okay. So then you watch, you see movies in the 60s, the 70s, by the 80s, the 90s, Shem Yerachem, they're walking around naked. Elliot, I'll tell you a story with BMT. I don't remember the name of the movie because who went to movies, but remember Rabbi Berzon taught here, Hananya Berzon. It was after your time. One of the Berzon brothers, the Azazi, is still teaching up a storm thing, became Shtikl Hasidish. Hananya, I believe, is long since retired. He's maybe a year younger than I am. So there was a cult movie that everyone ran to see. And Hananya asked the kids, how did you feel seeing that movie? people are walking around totally naked. And the kids look at him. So Hananya said a good word. He said, the world has gone down so much that you're totally not even sensitized. You see a movie, they kill, they act, they have sex, they're naked, they're this. You don't even realize it. This is totally normal, totally acceptable. So Rabbi Nasha Kleinfeld, you can imagine what he would like in the jail. They should take part of, there must be a library. I mean, let's think this is Adisville. If they build a sukkah, must have some books. Prisoners have a library of that, a Schattenstein Schatz, I'm sure, and block off an area where no one curses and you can't have TV. Now, the cursing is a real problem. Again, I don't know if I'll ever be in America again. My age, I have limited strength, but I can tell you, walking the streets of New York City, just to hear the way people speak, it's frightening. The F word is a noun, an adverb, a verb, an adjective. It's beyond comprehension. And these are people on the street talking that way. And no one says boo. You know, like, this is normal, this is fine, all right. So I can understand what Reb Menashe Klein is saying, and you know, you have to deal with reality. I can tell you in Israel, who puts in the tzitzit? So you should know that the big companies that produce taliyot, I think it's the correct word, we say talesim, but in Hebrew it's taliyot, and tzitzit. So there was a big scandal here that who was putting in the tzitzit? Prisoners who were Shomer Shabbos, they got paid in prison to put in tzitzit. And people were yelling and shouting. And then they said, but they're listening to the radio. Now, I don't know, halacha l'maisa, I don't know if you can passel the tzitzit. These are Shomer Shabbos people who have done tshuva, I hope, for whatever they did. And they have to have the rabbi's approval from jail, and they're paid to put in tzitzit. And there was a whole outcry. But one of the things they say, and people are putting in tzitzit, they're listening to the radio. And you see, there's a lot of culture difference here. One of my best and worst moments in the 53 years in Israel. If you remember last Monday, I said Charlie and I interacted, Charlie Hexter, because he's not here, he's on a tour now. We get a bigger class tomorrow, because this material is considered. Online, I think we get as many people today, the screen is all crowded. But it's interesting. You tell jokes about Satmar and Torah history and little stories, get a big crowd. You deal with the halacha, it says esoteric, you know, this a tshuva, an esoteric, a jail. But one of my best and worst moments, I was in Olech Hadash. Remember I said that last Monday? And you're just learning what's going on here. There's so many things. Unfortunately, I remember every conversation I ever had. Vic, if I would remember what I've learned in Shas and Paiskim, I'd be the Gadol Hador. Don't remember a thing. But all the Narishkeit, I remember word by word every conversation. So we had a meeting when this whole concept was beginning that we can teach Torah to the Anglo world, export Torah from Jerusalem. So it's now about 1970, 71, and we're having a meeting with Moshe Horowitz, Whitey Horowitz, myself, a few other Anglos, and the Chesed Yeshiva are now starting Shalavim, elsewhere, Anglo programs. And one of the, I don't want to mention his name, a Hesdi Yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva, an Israeli, German origins, gets up and he says, oh, Eze Talmidim Gruim, what bad students, get here. When the Seder is over at 1 and they eat lunch and the Seder begins again at 4, they have time, they listen to the radio. He actually said this, and we're sitting there, myself and Whitey and a few, we're looking at each other, and he was serious. I hope over the years, you know, it straightened them out. You know, American kids hear the radio. What's wrong with the, you know? Today, everyone listens to the Nigunim. There's so many different radio stations in Israel. You can get Nigunim and different Torah. I don't tell you with the computer. But you see, it's cultures in conflict. But ain't no chinami. In America, we grew up listening to the radio. In jail, you can imagine already what they're listening to, the TV. So Reb Menashe Klein, then he talks about Shabbos. And I mean, I have to pinch myself and see, for real? This is why I hope my dear Talmud listening in Chicago in the middle of the night now, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark, I hope you get some information. Who's the lawyer here? Who's he writing to? What happened? He says, let him have a guest for Shabbos. Now, I want to ask you, Elliot, your friend's in jail. He invites you for Shabbos. You think your wife would let you go? And it could be your wife is a tzaddikit. Do you want to go? And let him have a guest for Shabbos. Let him have a chavruta. And he's writing, and then he goes in as if he's a social worker, as if he's a parole officer. Again, Reb Menashe Klein, I don't know if he ever went to university, but he had a tremendous amount of knowledge. This man was with it. And he says, what's the whole purpose of jail? Rehabilitation. You don't want him to come back again. You don't want him to sin again. You don't want him to commit a crime again. And he says, and I'm quite, he uses the word shekarim, rehabilitation. It's the first time that word has been transliterated and published in response to literature. And he says, if you treat him properly and let him have a friend, he will feel the system cares about him and he's not going to disappoint you. He's not going to let you down. And he tells a story, Sipur Shani Makir, Bi Echad Mecha Chashuvim. Boy, oh boy, who does he mean? We never lack for scandal in the Torah world, all right? It's hard for me to accept this. I can tell you, let me say something in parentheses. This new scandal that broke now with Har Choma, with Rabbi Tau, I don't want to say Rabbi, with Tau, you don't know how much I'm suffering. You know why? The lady who came forth now and gave unbelievable testimony, I know her very well. She's a tzaddikit. She came in Aliyah the year we did. She worked hand in hand with myself and my wife in our projects for Russian Jewry. Remember, I have a rich history of mitzvah that my wife and I have done in our life. And this lady, wow, every syllable she says is true. So I take a look. I made a cheshbon. I told my grandchildren, I want you to think about it. You know, my children are gung-ho religious Zionists. They all voted my ticket, and they're proud that I came out in public for Rabbi Zipher Smotrich and Ben Gvir, etc. I said, I want you to listen. We have had so many scandals of Rashi Yeshiva, Mati alone. There's a guy, Scheinberg, up north. They say he's a gone idea. He just got out of jail. And now, Tao? I said, now let's look at the Litvish Welt. I never heard one scandal from Slabotka, from Panovich, from Mir. Have you heard, Vic? I ask you. Didn't hear one scandal. Think about it. So if we discussed it. It could be we who are in the religious science world, we're more exposed to the big world. I mean, all right, could be we are more exposed. But I hope that Torah makes us strong enough to stand firm. Anyway, coming back here, he says, Echad mei hachashuvim. And he says he did something wrong. Look at his words. Shayab maseh barak rikers alin lisheshan chadashim lisibah, for a reason. He has to elaborate lisibah. You know, go and think what it is. But he was in Rikers Island. They went to the judge and the judge, I'm quoting him word by word, the judge permitted him to go home every Shabbos. He had to leave a bond, maybe a few million dollars, whatever, and hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, the whole question of a bond. And he left it. Yatzalef necha Shabbat lebeito, v'chazal la'acha ha-Shabbat tachat pikuach v'im bitachon. That means a bond. She'yavza le'acha ha-Shabbat. You follow what he tells? This is like halacha l'maisa, b'didi ha-viyuvd, as the Gemara would say, as we say in Rabbinic Hebrew. And he says, and therefore I ask you to appeal to the, he uses the word, to the judge. Do something to help this son of an Admor. And he's right up to date here. This is exactly the plea you make and exactly the way in Israel I told you that they encourage people to become frumenship. Because the statistics show the more people shomer Shabbos, the less recidivism, the less you have where they're coming back for a second time or a third time, lo aleinu. And he pleads with them. Then he goes even further. He says, this is a Chassidic Rebbe. This is someone that there's more to his religious life than for the average individual. And he talks about, you won't believe this, a yotzeit, a sudat tzaddik, that in the yotzeit in the Chassidic world, you make a hilula. You make a sudat, here he says in modern Hebrew, sudat tzaddik. It's not a bad translation for hilula. And he says, this is very important. And here he's telling the lawyer to tell the judge, Sha'arz yerodim ha'nishamat elyonot ba'im betzel ha'mishpacha, that the souls from the other world come down to be with the family. You know where you saw this? Let me tell you, Natan. Let's go back to the 1950s, the 1960s in America. People's religion, what did it center around? Death, Kaddish, Yiska. Yiska, the shoes were full. I had this at weddings I performed. You had to make a kamale for the grandparents who weren't there, under the chuppah. I don't think you'll ever see this today. But, wow. Vic, do you remember this or not?
I think I've heard it once.
Well, you probably played at religious weddings.
I know, but
but the average wedding, and believe it or not, this already is Hasidic minhag here. Hilula, and the neshamas of the Zaydas, the elder Zaydas, all the yichis, they're here, they're present. And umakpim, makpidim shiya kol ha-mishpacha yachad. And he goes even from me yol dayat kaman ishamach belom al yom makpidim kol azman yotzeit shelachem. Wow, what a description. And you understand from this already, he has to be a direct descendant. This is medali yichis. Then he goes even further and he speaks about the wedding. All right, we have a concept of a wedding. People want to come, people want to go, people want to rejoice with the chatan v'kala. Vic, you must have a lot of schuyot upstairs. How many drums you played, etc., etc. Well, no, I'm serious. And there were probably times when you didn't get paid properly, and you said, the heck with it, let it go as a mitzvah. No, and here he quotes Binyamin, that that when Yosef met Binyamin, it's Chazal. Remember how many children they have? What are your names? Mupim Chupim. I didn't see my brother's wedding. And he named his kids. And he says, we have to tell this to the judge too, how important it is Shetisker Chufsha for weddings. Ulekein ma'od avakesh mi misha biyado l'shachro liyamim ha'elu va'ani et palel la'aruchet yamim v'shanim. And if someone judge does this, he will daven that he should have aruchat shanim v'yamim. All right, what is that? What's your first name?
Chaim.
Chaim, oh, that's an easy name. Chaimka, what does this remind you of? That's the story with Reb Aaron Cutler. That there was, I can't give you the total proper version, but just as I remember the gist of it, Nu Yomo, you remember that they needed help in getting yeshiva boys who survived out of Italy and get them to America, and the mafia got involved. And the head man from the mafia came to Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron told him, if you'll help me on this, I promise you, you will die in your bed with Arichat Yamim. Now, let me tell you, to tell a mafiosa that he's going to die in his bed, this is quite a bracha. Kachave. He outlived all the gangsters, died in his bed. His son came to Reb Shnur and asked Reb Shnir for the same bracha. And Reb Shneur said, I'm not my father. I'll give you the bracha, but I can't guarantee it the way my father could. And this is the tshuva, and I only hope we can get more details, because this has to be one of the most esoteric, fascinating tshuva ever written. Pleading with the judge, writing to the lawyer, telling the lawyer everything he has to know, everything he has to translate. And what's the story? Who is it about? Was it a Jewish judge? An article just appeared in the Kashrut magazine on the Schuyat of Meir Kahana. Everyone is maledicting Meir Kahana. I have one issue. I mean, he was off the wall. We can't fight Arabs and hate Arabs. We have to, they're human beings. If an Arab picks up a rock to throw at you, that's a different story. But on the other hand, Meir deserves all the credit in the world. There are over 1.5 million Russian Jews in Israel. Meir was the first one to make us cognizant of that issue. I lived it. No one can tell me. I lived it. I experienced it. Who knew about Russian Jewry? And Meir put the issue on the map already in the late 50s, the 60s. There was a response to SSSJ because Meir had paved the ground. So, Meir Kahana goes to jail, and he demanded kosher food. And the prison system said, no, we're not responsible. And it wound up going to court. And the beautiful article in the latest Kashrut magazine, and the judge was Weinstein, who lived to be, I think, 100 years old. Now, Weinstein was, you know, from the Lower East Side, the general story, a Jew who rose and became a judge. He remained quite observant. He put on tefillin every day. He was not alien. It's not like today you'll meet Jews that are alien to anything Jewish. He was quite observant. I don't know if it was totally Shomer Shabbos, but I'm sure he made Kiddush Friday night, etc. So he was the one that got the case. And he ruled in favor of Meir, that the prison system has to feed its inmates. And if someone keeps kosher, you can't force non-kosher down a rabbi's mouth. And as a result of Meir, according to this article, today every Muslim in prison could get halal food. Every Jew who wishes can get kosher food, etc., etc. So there's something to be said. Who was the judge? Who ruled on this? What happened? Okay, Adkan. All right, now we come to a very fascinating question. And here, I want to give you a little background. give you a source, a rather esoteric source, but quite an important volume. The Maverick Rabbi, Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein and the Institutional Synagogue, a new organizational form. This volume about Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein was one of you, you've heard my lectures over the decades, the big three. Who were the big three? Rabbis Goldstein, Young, and Lichtenstein. I don't know what the order should be. They're Goldstein may be the eldest among them. Goldstein, Lichtenstein, Young, I don't know. I don't even know. Same age, same bracket. This is the first half of the 20th century, well into the 50s, 60s. These were the most famous Orthodox rabbis on the American scene. Aaron Reichel, R-E-I-C-H-E-L, is a grandson of Rabbi Herbert Goldstein. Now, Rabbi Herbert Goldstein was the son-in-law of Harry Fischel. You've heard of Harry Fischel. He had only daughters. And you should know Rabbi Goldstein, the son-in-law from the Goldstein family chain, every last descendant is Shema Torah Mitzvah. We've actually had descendants studying right here in Gruss, and it's a fabulous, fabulous family. Many live in Eretz Yisrael today. And this is the grandson, a volume published in the 80s, early 80s, I believe. And beginning on page 253, he has a, it's a very delicate two pages, dealing with a problem that it's very hard for us to conceive of today. Halacha. Mixed dancing. Strange men and strange women touching each other, dancing with each other. How can this be mutter? Elisha benidat tumato lo tikrav. An open pasuk. All right, so machlekes rishonim, you can check all this out. It's not esoteric material. Machlekes, the Rambam, the Ravid, the Ramban. Is it an isa d'oraita or an isa d'rabban? What does that mean? That the act of sexual relations is an isa d'oraita. Elisha benidat tumato lo tikrav. What does it mean? Lo tikrav, the actual sexual act, or any act of love, of affection. That's the machleket. According to Maimonides, the Rambam, any act that involves sexual overtones is forbidden by the Torah, Chayav Malkot. According to the Ramban and others, it's only an Issa the Rabbanan. Only the sexual act is the oraita. The other acts of the other acts of we'll call kirva, cordiality, that's only the Rabbanan. Okay, but it's an Issa the Rabbanan. It's not that you're waving it away. It's an Issa the Rabbanan. Now, they used to describe Rabbi Palev. When Rabbi Palev taught, he was very clear, would explain everything. He was a Rosh Yeshiva 46 years in Reitz. And when he came to America, he was a Kletzka, Victor Chavi. He wanted to be a businessman, but like most rabbis who went into business, they all went bankrupt very quickly. Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan's son, Rabbi Tzias Rabinovich, is an example. So Rav Palev became a Rebbe, the most beloved Rebbe in Reitz, the late 10s, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. And he was ready to say, he would begin, you know, dealing with something in Ketuvah, Tevamet, etc., Kedushin. What is Anida? What is Anida? And he would explain, you know, so what is Anida? Well, any young girl could be already as early as 10, 11, 12 when they see their period. At that time, they're Anida. And a young girl is the cheskat nida. It's not that you can say she's not a nida. When she's a nida, she's a nida. Elisha benida tumato lo tikrav. She doesn't go to mikveh. It's not like a married woman who goes to mikveh. All right. Now, let me tell you a little story. Right in this building, Natan, there's a big Talmud Chacham who is one of the key Torah personalities in this building. His mother, he is not his mother. His father's first wife died in childbirth of the eldest child, was a girl. He was then left with a young little girl, desperately wanted to remarry, went to a young Israel dance and met a young woman, and they lived happily ever after, had three more sons, no more, one daughter, three sons. Right? Does anything bother you about my description? Here are two, a young lady and a young man who is Shomer Shabbos, something very, very rare in the 1930s, early 40s. But more than that, Elliot, where was the dance? Young Israel, what's going on here? My dear students, young Israels, other synagogues, dances were part of the curriculum, part of the schedule. No one asked questions. Dances. I would say that the attitude was, halavai Jewish boys should dance with Jewish girls and not with shiksas. But now you come to Rabbi Goldstein. Rabbi Goldstein was considered of rabbis Lukstein and Young. Rabbi Goldstein was considered the frumest. His shul had mixed dancing. And Rabbi Rachel, he's a rabbi, a lawyer. I know him, he's a wonderful individual. Rabbi Rachel was hard pressed. How could my grandfather allow this? So we have already seen the widespread attitude that existed even among many people who otherwise considered themselves Orthodox on the issue of permitting social dancing among men and women not married to each other. A permissive attitude prevailed even in the branches of the two largest Orthodox national synagogue organizations, the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America, it's the OU, and the Young Israel. In fact, even the Orthodox Rabbinical Council of America, it's the RCA, which I belong to. Did your brother belong to RCA? He wasn't a practicing rabbi, but it could be he belonged. In a full-fledged meeting, responded in 1939, quote, to the question whether or not Jewish organizations are permitted to arrange for functions at which dancing of boys and girls takes place, end quote, by referring the question to a committee. You follow that? So you push it to a committee, like in Israel, they push it to a committee, you can forget about it. Kiss it goodbye. But all right, that's a way of saying, all right, it's something we have to think about. Let the committee handle it. The OU actually considered itself victorious, listen to this, when it convinced a public high school to switch dance events away from the Holy Sabbath Eve to other evenings of the week. In other words, the dance shouldn't be on Friday. It should be, let's say, Thursday night, Sunday night, so Jewish students could attend. And you see, what he's saying is absolutely correct. He's not making it up. Someone growing up in the 20s to 30s outside of the Malachim, who can say dancing is forbidden, taken for granted? Let them meet. Halavai they should marry. And he goes on to explain that Rabbi Goldstein was caught up in a reality. He was not in a position to abrogate it. It would have created tremendous negativism. Many people would have left the shul. But when Rabbi Goldstein remarked that the whole purpose was not the dance. The purpose was to keep the participants involved in the other synagogue activities, and ideally to draw them to multifaceted events which themselves had unequivocal, redeeming, educational, or religious components. And it was to battle assimilation and intermarriage. Mrs. Goldstein once remarked that it was an achievement in itself just, quote, to keep Jewish boys dancing with Jewish girls as the first step towards their heritage. So you understand, these people were caught up in a problem which was way, way beyond the synagogue. Dancing was then considered the natural way for boys and girls to meet. Not just Jewish, non-Jewish. Dancers were all over the place. Kids are going to high school. High schools have proms. High schools have dances. And the minute you get involved, well, a boy and girl hold each other. There's emotion, there's feeling, attraction. What keeps them from intermarriage? Religion is not overwhelmingly important to them. Today it's unimportant altogether outside of the Torah world. And I would say, paraphrasing a phrase that we'll see later in the Tshuvot, Tov shiyu shogegim v'alyu mezidim. And I don't want to condemn anyone. This was the reality at that time. I still remember as a kid, you had bar mitzvahs, you had weddings, everyone dancing. There's no concept of kedusha, of sanctity. We were fighting battles just to get kashrut proper. And then Shabbat, Tarat Mishpacha, I would say, was the last line of battle, the last line of offense that we took. But this was the reality. Now, here's a fascinating tshuva. And it's Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Dalet, Siman Ayin Bet. What do we have? What's the problem?
Fire alarm.
Fire alarm. Okay.
Most likely
it's what?
False alarm.
A false alarm. Yeah, they know. Okay, it went. Okay, Nekavela Tov. I don't see any smoke, don't say them. Chelik Dalet, Siman Ayin Bet. And the question is from 1964. You see, Ramaz, I'll give you an example. Ramaz had an annual dinner dance every year. That continued, it may continue until today. I don't know. Do you know Aliyah? Your brother taught there. But Zichrono Levracha. But it may continue until today. I don't know. The high school had a dance with MTA boys invited. And that doesn't continue today, Baruch Hashem. But that was part of the course. Talking the 50s. This shayah is from 1964. It's to, I imagine this is a rabbi with the last name Rotman. I would imagine it's R-O-T-H-M-A-N, Reish Aleph Tet Mem Aleph Nun, Shlita. And he's telling the following story. You told me about your synagogue that every year they rent a hall and they make a banquet, a yearly event to raise money for the shul. Osim Sudah Gedolah in Klizmarim, they hire a band. Vic is there. And in addition to the band, Ubemecholot v'likud anashim v'nashim yachtav yidubkum. And men and women hug each other and dance with each other. It's an Orthodox synagogue. V'yalpi rov, rak ish v'yishto rakdim k'lome, shebaal lo keyach at ishto, v'lo eshet chaveiro. im yesh beze isa v'im chayav limchot b'chem kol she yesh b'yadol limchot. What a question. This is a fundraiser for the shuv. And everyone, this was norm, this was par for the course. Dancing, you see Hollywood movies, old movies out of the 40s, the 50s, all you see is dancing. Today, dancing, who's going to show dancing? It's, they have other things they show lower language. But dancing. Now, the majority of people dance husband and wife. Do you have to protest? Do you have to yell? Do you have to shout? Now, what do you mean, husband and wife? Tell me, can you dance with your wife all month? Younger people I'm talking about. My age, there's no Shiloh. But can you dance with your wife? I told you, I was walking, I held my wife's hand when we walk, and I saw and got all excited, such love. I said, dummy, yes, love, but this is, we shouldn't fall. It's a different mahut when you're our age. And I unfortunately wish I could have someone's hand to hold all the time I walk. I fell a week ago, it'll be 2 weeks this coming Wednesday. And Baruch Hashem, I think I'm over now all the bruises. But Zalo Pashut, but leave that in parentheses. Come back here. Can you dance with your wife? She's in Nida. Right or wrong? Half the month. But everyone else is dancing. You're embarrassed. You get up, you start dancing. Tzniut. Tell me, you remember the story I told you 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago with the Bachanan Wasserman, the wedding? You know what I'm talking about? With the, it's a true story. I mean, I heard it from people who were at the wedding. I don't have to cite any source. So Rabbi Hanan was in America in 1938. They pleaded with him to remain. He went back and you know the rest. The price we've paid and people still kowtow to America, to England. I spit in their face and stand firm. Am levadad yishkom. Who are you to tell us what to do? Where were you when 6 million were being killed? But all right. I hope Smotrich and Ben-Gvir deliver that message with dignity, but clearly. Adam Karev Etzlatzmo, if we don't protect the Jewish people, no one else will. So Rabbi Elchanan was in America 38. He was based in Brooklyn, raising funds for Branovich. And there was a wedding, a wealthy balabas, and they said, Rabbi, my son is getting married, be Masada Kedushin, and you know, slipped him $100 for Branovich. And it's the wedding, and right after the wedding, you know, Kedatva Kedin, everything is fine and good. The Chatan kisses the Kala. And Rabbi Elchanan got very upset. And so they asked Rabbi Elchanan, Rabbi, what are you getting so upset? They're married. So Bochanan said, there's certain things you do in private, you don't do in public. When you do it, le'enei kol Yisrael, what are the last words of the Torah, Natan? Le'enei kol Yisrael. When you do it, le'enei kol Yisrael, it's the end of the Torah. That's what Bochanan said. And I want you to know, this came back to haunt me. Why? I don't know if you paid attention, but God privileged me. I accomplished something against all odds. The documentary on the Rav, The Lonely Man of Faith. So, you know, the producer did his job. I didn't interfere. And he has there the Rav in Boston as a rabbi, and there's footage out of a marriage in the 1940s from Boston. And right there, for a second, he shows the Rav being beside a condition. And it's over, the chatan kisses the kala. You can see, it's a second. Boy, people criticized me. How do you say? I said, what we showed, that's history, that's facts. That's what the Rav, Baruch Hashem, they had a proper wedding. Kedat v'kedin, take a look what you have today. So, these, what do you mean, in public? You're dancing with your wife? And not only that, let's say there's a good Jew there. Let's say Yomo's second cousin of Colin's Stellar Origins is sitting there, and he sees everyone else dancing. No, his wife says, I don't want to be a wallflower, and else is dancing. They stop dancing. And you see, these very delicate. Then I want to ask something else. What about if the people there who are not married, everyone else is dancing, and then and they, you know, what's wrong? I mean, you can understand. It's not just this man and wife, she's not a neither, she went to mikveh, everything is fine, they're dancing. It's, you gotta look at the whole picture. It's zima. It's a riot. What do you have here? Lo tikrab. And what are you dealing with? You're dealing with sex, a powerful urge, a young person. I don't have to tell you. Okay. Now, before we go any further, I have to tell you again, show you a source, tell you a story, and boast about my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren's yichus. Am I allowed, Natan? What do you say? Baruch Hashem. How did I get involved in response to literature? Most people don't, we were growing up, whoever heard the word response to literature, even until I got smicha? Well, you know, all right, maybe they threw around an Oda B'Yehuda, Chatam Sofer, but response to literature, who heard about it? There was a Reform rabbi in Pittsburgh, Rabbi Solomon B. Freehoff. And I think it was 1948, JPS, Jewish Publication Society, which you got to understand, when I say JPS, timed 1940, 1950, 1960, you have to shake. That was the leading Jewish publication house in America. To have a book published by JPS changed your whole life. I know a guy named Donnie Rothkopf. His book was published by JPS. It changed Rothkopf's entire life. Chaim, do you know Rothkopf or not?
Brother.
Donnie Rothkopf. Aaron Rekheffer. Changed my entire life. They brought me to Israel. A guy, someone who knows how to learn, and he had a book published by JPS? Wow. Solomon Freehoff, this Reform rabbi, I mentioned him before, he had been the chairman of the Reform rabbinate in relation to World War II and coming up with response literature. He represented the Reform rabbinate, Rabbi Young represented the Orthodox rabbinate, had to come up with a prayer book that was acceptable to everyone. He published a volume, The History of Response Literature, 48. What a fabulous volume. A number of years later, he published a treasury, how do I get it on? A treasury of responsa. Now, it's very fascinating. There is not one word in these two volumes that is not al pi halacha. He, whenever he had a shaila and didn't understand something, he went to Rabbi Zev Leiter, who was the Ungarische great Talmud Chacham in Pittsburgh. I throw out the challenge again. I'm very curious what remains of Rabbi Freehoff in the Jewish Torah world. I mean, I was so influenced by these two volumes, so impressed. I can't believe he doesn't have descendants who became Balei Tshuva, Talmidei Chachamim, Yireim V'Shleimim. Can anyone help me out on that? I've yet to teach a Freehoff. I've yet to meet a Freehoff, but I'm curious. Now, if you open up the volume, A Treasury of Responsa, he has the entire volume is devoted to responsa literature. Rishonim, Achronim, he picks out samples and he gives you a feeling of what responsa literature is about. Beginning on page 206, he has exactly the responsum that Rav Menashe Klein is going to quote, that's quoted by the Chafetz Chaim, by Rav Yosef Steinhardt, the Zichron Yosef from Germany. My great-grandchildren on their grandfather's side from the mother, Steinhardt, that's the last name. Their mother is an enekel of the Chatam Sofer, an Unstoffer on her mother's side, and on their grandfather's side, in other words, the grandmother is an enekel of the Chatam Sofer, the grandfather's an enekel of Rabbi Yosef Steinhardt. And anyone from England will recognize the Steinhardt name. Yomi, you know why? In England, there was no kosher ice cream. All the ice cream was made with gelatin. In America, there was some mekilim on the gelatin when it was an ice cream, and you had a heksha. In England, the rabbinate there would not be mekil on gelatin. You follow? The big machlokes of the 20s, the 30s. And they, the Steinhardt family, manufactured kosher ice cream. And they were, well, anyone from England, you say, I boast about my great-grandchildren, Steinhardt Yichis, oh, the ice cream. They know that right away. Now, Rav Yosef Steinhardt, give you his name, the Zichron Yosef he's known by. 1720, 1776, was rabbi of Upper Alsace, and then in Lower Alsace, finally the rabbi of Fürth, until his death. He was one of the best known German Talmudists of his time, receiving questions from Hungary, Italy, the Netherlands, and Switzerland. And this tshuva is exactly the question under discussion. He translates it beautifully into English, but what was the shaila? I'll paraphrase it. In his community, boys and girls, sex is sex, attraction is attraction. And it seems on Shavuos, they made a party to celebrate the Chag, and boys and girls are dancing together. Let me read the English, give you a little feel. Your letter reached me last Friday before the entrance of the Shabbat, bride and queen. After I read two or three pages of it, I stood shaking and desolate. I share all your sorrow at the great breach of the law which the unbridled children of our people made in your city in contemptuously violating our sacred Torah and proper Jewish demeanor in profaning the holiday by dancing, against which the rabbis have decreed even when men and women dance separately. And could you imagine that not dancing separately, but dancing boys and girls, they have come riotous. And they put your honor to shame with abuse. And one of the fathers of these corrupt sons led in this trespass. And the Kshayla is even more involved, because it seemed that when you rent the dance hall, you had to pay a tax to the governor. And here the rabbi made an issue. He fought with them. And they had to abolish the tax that the governor was going to receive, and the governor was involved. And Rabbi Yosef Steinhardt, in responding, says, whatever happened to you happened to me. And he tells the story that happened to him years earlier in Alsace-Lorraine. And the governor, he had to abolish it, and the governor sent for him and wanted to know why he abolished it. And he brought psukim from the Nach, and the governor was impressed and said, good, your words seem acceptable. And he gave Rabbi Yosef Steinhardt the authority to abolish, and supported him, and he was able to maintain his rabbinate there. Now, this is just a drop of background, Zichron Yosef. What we see from here is, first of all, the Gemara in the Sanhedrin, Yoma, that sex wasn't just invented today. Sex was always here. The challenge was always here. Eitz Ratzon, you all know the Gemara. They pleaded with God, abolish the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah, and that was abolished. They saw us and abolished the Yetzirah for sex. There was no human progress. Chickens stopped laying eggs. And Eliot is very simple. Make a cheshbon. You married a girl you didn't know, a total stranger. Right or wrong, you had children. You have spent a fortune on their education. Think of where you'd be today. No children, no one to bother you, no one to tell you what to do, no wife to nag you. All that money, all yours. You follow? All right, you'd be a damn fool, but that's a different story. But thank God, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us back the sexual age. And it's, you know, it's a Medrash Rabbah, it's called it Ki Tov, Tov Miyod. So the Medrash says, Ki Tov, Yetzer Tov. Ki Tov Miyod, even better than the Yetzer Tov, the sexual urge. Not, there'd be no progress. But you see, all these people who tell you, Rebbe, you know, when I taught on a much lower level, so, okay, Rebbe, how can you give Mitzvah, blah, blah, blah. What do you know about sex? In your, like, they think in your generation you didn't have sex. Idiot. If we didn't have sex, we wouldn't be here. Our parents didn't have, we wouldn't be here. Of course, it's always there. But you see here from the Tshuvah, look how widespread it was then. And Yontif, here you see one kehillah after another had dancing on Yontif. So you can understand already what you were up against in the West Side Institutional Synagogue, Rabbi Goldstein's synagogue, Young Israel. All right, today, I don't say we have sexual problems, but at least it's not institutionalized. There's a big difference, and we have to educate. This is the big challenge, how to educate. Now, I've said this a million times, not to fear sex, but to sanctify sex. Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani kadeshat asmacha b'muta lecha. Now, okay. Let me deal with one other source before we deal with the tshuva. And again, you can trace this back. You can write a whole master's thesis. Can you dance on Yontif? Can you dance on Shabbos? Shulchan Aruch HaRechayim Siman Shin Lamed Tet Sif Katan Gimel Shin Lamed Tet Sif Katan Gimel. It's based upon the Gemara in Beitza. Ein betapchim lahakot kafal kafal lo mesapkin lahakot kafal yerech v'lo meraktim gezeira shema yitakein cliché. That on Shabbat you're not allowed to clap, you're not allowed to jump around, you're not allowed to dance, because if you do all this, they did it with musical accompaniment, and it could be playing a piano or a banjo, I don't know, maybe there's no Isidia writer, but Shem Yitakin Kli, the strings of a violin, etc., something breaks, and there already have Yisroel D'Oraita involved. Wow. So it's absolutely forbidden. All right. The Shulchan Aruch. So let me, we'll come back, we'll ask a basic question. Let's now look into the Ramah. The Ramah, v'ahad mesaptkin umeratkin ha'etne v'lo mechin b'chu mishum demutav sheyushogegin v'al yuyu mezitin. So, today, people dance. Let's say, what do you mean we dance? Take some chatorah. Take some chatorah. Simchat Torah begins, we have sources already, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. It's a chag created by the people. It's fascinating. Simchas Torah, we do many things which are forbidden. Whoever heard of 1,000 aliyot on Yontif? 5 aliyot, that's it. You can't be Mosef, it's not like Shabbat. Whoever heard, some places tell me in Atlanta, they read the Torah at night? Sure, all right. Whoever heard of reading the Torah at night? I'm happy to say, in my son-in-law's shul, they don't read the Torah at night. At my minyan at the Kotel, the 46 years I had my minyan. Now it goes on, but yours truly and the chazan, we both lost our legs at exactly the same time. We never read the Torah. How can you read the Torah at night? But look what goes on. And no one in Atlanta is going to say, it's Usher yelling, Shanna. All right, that's Dominican. By the way, you should know it was cited in response to dealing with World War II. Why? Because many times they couldn't pull davening together by day. They were actually fighting. But at night, so they said, let's read the Torah. And they said, we do it on Simchas Torah. So they actually did read the Torah Friday night, but they didn't make brachot. But... So one example. I'll give you a better story. And B'didi HaViyuvna, I think I write about this in Washington. If not, I've said it a number of times. Why you, Shavuos? I stayed up all night. Boy, you know, you're a kid, you have energy. Today I can't even dream of it, but stayed up all night and then walked home, a half-hour walk, 40-minute walk, and conked down. So I asked the Mashkich, I asked Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, my Rebbe, and I said, wie kann man tanzen Yom Tov? You know, I quoted, not allowed. So this is like I have it all, I hope I wrote up both of them. So the Mashkich said to me, Avada daftasa, it has to be permissible. We danced Shavuos in Lakewood, in Slabodka, and the Alter, Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, and the Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, haben uns nicht bemerkt. They never told us anything wrong with it. So you see, Jews dance, and here's an open halacha, you're not allowed. So one reason is, Tov Shishogim V'al Yumei Zev. All right, that maybe applies to Atlanta. Okay. But how does it apply to Slabodka? So the Ramah goes further. The Yesh Omrim de Bizman Chazeh Hakol Shari. Everything is permissible. The Ein Anu Bekiyin Basiyat Klishir. We're not going to start manufacturing musical instruments on Shabbos and Yom Tov. V'leka l'migza shema yitaklein shir klishir. The milta, the lo shachir. So who do you have? Yomor, you know a lot of things. Yomor, do you know how to fix a benching? Do you know how, Ellie, do you know how to fix a violin? No, I don't know how to fix a violin either. Vic, you're in the music business. Did you know how to fix a violin?
Never tried.
The Efsha Sha'alzena Hagula Hakel Bahakol. And that's exactly what the minig is today. Slabodka, Lakewood, YU, Mekhas Harav, Panovich, Hasidic Shtibbles, everyone dances on Shabbat on Yom Tov. And look into the Mishnah Brura, Sif Katan Chetan, the Mishnah Brura. Ubiyom Simcha Torah Mutah Lerakei Bishashom Rim Klusim De Torah Mishim Kovet HaTorah Kiven De Leit Bazeh Ela Mishum Shvut. And the Mishnah Brura says, quoting also Achronim here, that Simchas Torah, when it's Kavod HaTorah, we wave aside Anisa D'Rabbanan. Kavod HaTorah. And I don't have to tell you, some people went as far, the decorate the Torah with bells. It shakes. You hear bells ringing. So I was told, and the Mishnah Berurah says it here, that this is Kavanat Torah. You don't make an issue out of it. Here the Mishnah Berurah says, Ein kedai la'atir le'tipuach v'rikud v'lo kishkush p'mamonim v'zakim v'kol ken shakli shir v'yasa. But I saw many shuls where they don't make an issue out of the little bells ringing when they take out the Torah. You hear it shaking. So, in love b'nevi'im heim, b'nei nevi'im heim. This is the Shulchan Aruch. Now I'll tell you what's very fascinating here. When you look in to the Bi'ir Halacha, let me give you the Divrei HaMatkil, Lahakel Bakol, so you look in and he starts talking about, well, we still have to be careful with how much we predict the dancing, the jumping up and down on Yontif. And he quotes the Zichron Yosef, quotes the whole story, exactly what Rav Menashe Klein is about to quote. Chel ra'ada chazani b'chol tzaratehem litza al davach ha'pirtza ha'gedola. And he goes on and on. La'avod b'shteit nefesh al dat v'din toratenu ha'kadosha. It's the Hebrew to what I read to you, the English translation by Solomon B. Freehoff. And this is the Shaila. This is the question. Okay. Reb Menashe Klein begins the tshuva. Let me copy to you Masha Heshiv Hagon Rev Yosef Steinhardt Mesher Tavar Zichron Yosef Siman Yud Chzayin Lagon Rev Yaakov, and quotes the whole tshuva, quotes the description, and Chas v'Chalila that we should have dancing Bachurim u'betulot Yachad. Kal v'choma ben b'no shel kal v'choma la'asasuf ashebik yibo v'tarav v'tanoshim v'noshim, and men and women together. Chas v'chalila, Rabbi Menashe Klein says, absolutely forbidden. Now, if you look into the Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim Siman Tuf, Tav Kaf Chaf Tet, much later it deals with Chol HaMoed and Yontif, you'll see there the halacha that at Chol HaMoed it's especially important to have policemen, have sholtrim, have mashgichim, because the boys and girls shouldn't mix. And what you see here is obvious. During the usual week, we're all busy. We're going to school, we're going to work, we're studying, we have to have a panasa, we have to make a living. Comes Chol HaMoed, everyone is free. In those days, today already it's not like it, but in Israel it's different. But comes Chol HaMoed, I remember Bnei Akiva, when were our big tiyulim, Chol HaMoed. Remember, used to go to Staten Island, I think it was called Clove Park. If I don't have the right name, I can be corrected. I remember the ferry, it was a big outing. Then I remember we went to Palisades Park, we went to New Jersey. Everyone is free. And that's what he quotes, the Shulchan Aruch, the Siman that I just cited. And boys and girls, men and women, Ta'arovet anashim v'nashim. We have to be careful. Ein lecha dargal hasatat yetzer hara u'ma'ala liznut yoter mizeh shemiponenim u'mabitim b'fnei anashim v'abetulot b'shat harikud וחזין מעשי אבותיהם ביודעים של אנשים וקורא אני עליהם לד ליד לא ינקה מדינה של גחנם. And he goes step by step here. If you can't eat to your limb together and you have to point mashkichim and you want to keep the men and women apart, and here you're going to have an affair with dancing. They're looking at each other. They're seeing each other. And it can lead to snirsnut. All right, I don't have to tell you. A woman attracts. That's the way God built the world. Shmiret enayim. Person has to be modest. All right? And he says, and you're going to be dancing. And he says, what is dancing? Not just holding hands. Mechabkim, minashkim, lemalot talva, ubaim lidei maseh eva onen. Ve'lefamim yamtiku al yedei sod yachad lehityached bayom v'layla. And he says this can lead to the worst possible sexual sins. Chas v'chalila, you should permit it in a shul. And then goes a drop further. We'll end with this, but it's what I started this year with an hour ago. Spoke about it. Every lady is b'cheskat nida. What are you talking about? The kama poskim rishonim v'achronim hanogeya bechem l'shem chiba v'kiruv basa over alav li'isha b'nina tumata lo tikrav. It's the Rambam, everyone agrees that chiba v'kiruv, all right, the Rambam, it has to be the actual act, but it's certainly asa afilu kriva ba'alma asa. Madhibu would say kiruv ba'alma, I believe. V'hamachabka u'menashka l'shem taiva lo ker. And he quotes the Rambam, Perikafalev Hilchot Isurei Bia. And he quotes the Rambam Simon in Sefer Mitzvot, Mitzvah Shin Nun Gimel. Vafilu edat haRamban, even though it's not an Isha D'oraita, lo kinalav makat mardot mi derabbanan. And he gives you one source after another. So there's no question that this type of dance, this type of event, absolutely asa. It can lead to Isurim the Rabbanan and even to Isurim the Oraita. And you had every right to shout, to protest. Okay. The start of the tshuva. We'll see next week. He goes further. And we'll see the chashat, the reality of the situation, the world today, men and women, it's 1964, but the breach is already starting in our whole concept of sexual diffidence and separation. It's starting to cave in. What's fascinating, I'll show you next week, a very interesting tshuva of Reb Moshe with St. Louis, with something that may be slightly similar, but also dealing with Kedushat Beit Knesset. And from there, I'll show you another tshuva which touches upon the question I alluded to at the start of the shiur. What about a conservative temple? Can you daven in it? Can you daven there? And these are fascinating questions. Events that take away from the Kedusha, the sanctity. Where do we stand, halacha l'maisa? The first two questions are more black and white. The third question already is very gray. leave it for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, we pick up exactly where we left off with World War III descriptions of Chabad and Satmar, and what Satmar thought of Chabad. And some of those quotes are very interesting because they're very insightful. It's not something you can pass up on. It has weight to it. But we'll leave that for tomorrow. I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence. What did we do today? We finished out Rikers Island. We finished out the guest for Shabbat. The Hilula, the wedding, the family, the Yichus, the relatives, the souls that come from all the worlds. And we touched upon another question that leads us to the whole question of dancing, so widely accepted in Young Israel, OU, even RCA, you see Double Talk. It was a different world 80, 90 years ago because of the reality of what existed at that time. And here it overflows into this question of the annual dinner and dance banquet to support Ramaz, to support the shul. And the rabbi wants to know, should he protest? And I have to tell you, a rabbi to protest is out in the limb. You're going to have a lot of problems. I'm reading, I want to thank Rabbi Grinstein for lending me a biography of Rav Avadya Yosef as a human being, family man. And believe me, this biography would not be published by Artscroll. It's Mesora. Wow. And I'm positive that at least two of the brothers of the authoress who combined with the author, my student Rivka Yosef, today, I can't pronounce her last name, it's a good Sephardic name, but I'm sure that the brothers are not having nachat from the volume. But he talks about Egypt, where it was Av Beitin sent by the chief rabbis of Israel, and they had a lot of opposition because he protested their ignorance, transgressions. A rabbi, even if you're Rav Avadya Yosef, and you protest. Let me end off with one story from the volume that particularly, I have time, even if you're going to get on the bus, it's leaving at 11, I'm told. It particularly tickled me. What was the story? Rav Avadya loved music. From childhood on, he had an ear for music and a nice voice. And this lady, Rivka, his student, she rebelled, his daughter, my student. She rebelled a little and went to Michlala. And Rav Avadya, I have to say, loved me and honored me because he was frightened what's going to be at Michlala. And he found out the teachers, some of them know how to learn, and are Yireim, Vishleimim, etc. And she was my student, she was fine. And she writes how she was listening to modern Israeli music, and her brothers went coming to the father hysterical that she's listening to trash. And he went to her room to hear what she's listening to. And she's listening to a song I've heard of, Rosa Rosa. It's a modern Israeli song. And his father, Bravaja, walked away fine. That Friday night in shul, he was the Baal Tefillah. And he was singing, what part of the Davar? I think it was the end of Lechadodi, Boikala, Boikala, to Rosa Rosa. And his sons came home furious at Rivka. You caused Abba to embarrass us so. And he sang the last stanza to Rosa, Rosa. Well, I don't have to tell you a story like that. Made me think, and Vic, again, I remember all the Narishkeit. When I learned in Lakewood, the Baal Menagin was Getzel Rosenblatt. Lezichrono Levracha, it hurts me to think he's gone. He lived in Kew Gardens Hills. He ran on Vlai Place, the shul for Balei Tshuva with many minyanim. That was Reb Getzel. And a wonderful soul. Married to a girl, Telma Glicksman. She'd lived me well from B'nai Kiva, that was B'nai Kiva of the Bronx. Mizrachi, I should say. Mizrachi, yeah, but we were the only Ken in the Bronx. So every week he introduced a new niggun at Sudashli Shit. And one week he sang Shir Malot to the tune of what was the song? On top of old Rosie, all covered with snow, I met my true lover, never to go. I can be corrected if I have the words wrong. But that was the tune. Shir Hamalot v'shuv Hashem et shivat Zion hayinu kechomim, etc. And Rabbi Aaron loved the niggun and said, Nachamo, Nachamo, Vaita, Vaita, once again, once again. So that took me back to Rosa, Rosa. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Fenalia Yomo, open it up to the world, to our wonderful students, and see if there are any comments.
Rebbe.
Yeah.
You may...
Wait, I can't hear you. One second. Start again.
You need to unmute.
Unmute?
Yeah. Okay. When you made reference to Rikers Island, was that the case in point? That particular...
No. He tells a story about another case that he was involved with 6 months. Chad Mei HaChashuvim Mishum Sibah. He did something. Who the heck knows what he did? But Rikers Island, and the judge allowed him to go home every Friday afternoon, and he came back Saturday night. And he left, bitachon means bail money, whatever it was. I mean, if I be the judge, I say, fine, if you put $1 million on the table, fine, the securities, I don't know, I'm pretty sure you won't run away if there's $1 million at stake. I got to tell you, nowadays, considering the cost of real estate in Jerusalem, I'm not sure $1 million will do the trick, but we'll hope for the best. Got it? Mark, did you hear from Rabbi Helmig?
Not yet. I'll check, make sure I got the right email. The religious diet that, it's taught, and, when we teach staff the legal things that impact the Bureau of Prisons, that's a famous case. The Bureau lawyers know all about it. I was very involved in arranging whether they call it common fare or certified religious diet, Jews and Muslims to sign up for the program.
Wow. Okay, but Masamei Kahana has a big schut that adds to its schuyot. Everyone puts him down, and it's not that I say he's totally right. Palginim Dibura, but give him credit. He wasn't totally wrong. Ribbono Shel Olam. But all right, that's the oppression Israel and America and Biden and the Jews around Biden. Shem Yerachem, how Jewish are they? And Nides, they did a whole editorial today saluting him that he went to visit the people sitting Shiva whose relatives were killed in the terrorist attack in Ariel. He crossed the green line. And I don't know, I have a problem shaking hands with Nides. He's married to a Goyer, his children are Goyim. To me, that's not a Jew anymore. I'm sorry. The Gemara in Yevamah, Daf Yud Zayin. Okay. Anyway, I'm a fanatic. Let me proudly stand on that topic and that title. Yeah. Anyone else with any comment? Yes. Nachum, are you saying something?
Yeah. Sorry. Two things. First of all, what you just mentioned, I know people from the State Department. They actually have rules. Somebody was here once, they were in the embassy, and a friend of ours in Efrat invited them to a party. A friend in Ramot invited them, and they had to get special permission, because Ramot's over the line. It's the State Department.
I know that. Ambassador Friedman, Yirat Tzadik, he couldn't cross the green line when he was the ambassador. Those were the rules.
But what you said, Obadiah Yosef was known that he liked to, what was her name, the famous Egyptian singer.
Kalam Tum. Yeah, it's all in the book. It's all in the book. This is not a censored volume. You got to read about his engagement, what went on with the money, and her parents couldn't come up with the money. And then one Friday night, he walks over and he says to the caller to be, let's forget about the money and our parents. Let's get married and we'll manage. And it's beautiful, beautiful. I tell you, I knew Rabbi Avadya. I cry. He was such an able, a sensitive person. All right, he got involved in politics and he had that habit of shooting from the hip. See, I was in the rabbinate. And the rabbinate straightens you out. If you shoot from the hip, they're gonna give you dalet mitat beitim, not just shoot you. So people don't know what a wonderful human being he was. And then you get involved here with the local politics, with the aguda. You know, again, he had a bit of an inferiority complex that he had to find nosei chen in the eyes of the charedim. I'm not overly impressed. I'm very happy to my way of thinking and my way of doing and my way of being a Ben Torah. I don't know how many other people started learning this morning at 4 a.m., but I'm one of them. But Baruch Hashem, I'm very proud. I see, you know, you see certain things here. So Baruch Hashem, we got to go on the proper path. The Rav is a lodestar for me. But not everyone has to think like me or be like me or act like me. The Rav used to get hysterical. Because I'm doing it, you're doing. Do like I do only if you think I'm right. But if you think I'm not right, do like others. You don't have to follow me. We have a different way of thinking. But Rav Avadya was something very special. Look, I had the schut to be mater and aguna with him. That's not a small matter that I came up in the kollel with the svara, the sveika, and Rav Avadya put his two hands on my svara and said, you're absolutely right. And he wrote a tshuva of 20 large legal cages with endless sources backing up my thinking. And I saw the way he looked at me, and we smiled and we understood each other with one wink of the eyes. Rav Avadya, but this volume is very unique. It's Rav Avadya as a human being. And you'll see when in Cairo, when he wore rabbinic hat, suddenly anti-Semites, they hate, you know, Jews, Arabs. It's 48. It's a terrible time of tension. So he put on an Egyptian hat. You'll see, he took off the, like I say about Borough Park, you're not allowed to wear a black hat in Borough Park. It's Sakonet Mefashet. They know you're Jewish. If you go any further, you're not allowed to have a beard, not allowed to pay, not allowed, you understand, where do you draw the line? But he took off the hat and put on an Egyptian hat. He was one of a kind, Rav Avadya. And his wife was, you know, the right wife for him, 1,000%. Totally dedicated, devoted, and understood this man. And how he, what I love is how he had to save up pennies to buy svarim and sneak them into the house because he didn't want his wife to know. And that's very familiar to many of us, myself included, because I have so many svarim and so many libraries, and my way I have room and books behind books behind books. The worst thing is today, I only can find the books that I know of from 10, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. But all the new books, I have a big problem. Where did I put them? Which library? All right. Kachi daka shel chayim. The Rav used to give all the new books he got to the Gottesman Library. And that's the story with the Gottesman Library. It's a story one of a kind that when Rav Aaron and Tova got married, the Rav sent an invitation to the Sri Deyesh. The Sri Deyesh sent back a gift to the Rav for the young couple with a whole inscription to them. Sri Deyesh Chelek Aleph had just appeared, Mossad Rav Kook. That volume the Rav gave, he didn't even open it, he didn't look at it, but maybe he looked at it, he didn't look at the dedication. He gave it to the Gottesman Library. And Aaron always used to say, you can find the volume that was a gift to me in Tova from the Sri Deyesh. In the Gottesman Library, you ask for Sri Deyesh Chelik Aleph. All right, are there any more comments? We have to end off here. The bus is leaving.
If I may.
Yeah?
Look,
Rabbi Yosef has put the relying on the Tshuva Saramba, who says you can use going melodies in Torah context. There's
what, wait, you can use what? What? I can't hear. You can use...
According to the Rambam has a teshuva.
Right.
That said you can use goy melodies for Torah lyrics.
Oh, you're talking about... Yeah, there's a lot written on that. The Bach has a teshuva. Halakha l'maisa, if it's not fravei de zara, there's no problem using a goyish lyric. But maisa,
right.
But Rabbi Yehuda, my problem is... Do you remember the young Israels in growing up at Christmas time, Friday night? How did they sing L'chadol di silent night, holy night, L'chadol di likrat kamar?
They would sing, I don't know, L'amashir mola, it's ever a
Right.
When you say in Bayah 31, Motuaxiu Shogegin is not a heter. Shogeg means Easter and don't make a sin.
Right.
But
it's not a heter. No, we'll get to that.
And Moshe goes through Luke to justify.
Right, no,
so it's not a heter.
No, it's not a heter. But it's a question of whether you're obligated to speak up. We'll see it in the tshuva. We'll see it in Reb Menashe Klein. But you're absolutely right. I would hate to think for Talmidei Chachamim we go with the shita al yushogin shogin val yumei zidin. And this is why the Ramah gives two reasons. Because it bothers him the shogin that's what you say Talmidei Chachamim. So he gives another reason that bizman hazeh. It's okay because none of us know how to really fix. Look into the Mishnah.
Not true either, because when you go to the Jerusalem Symphony, the first violin plays G, and the people who are playing it are metaken klisha. So the Zera would have played this one on
set. No, but that's not really metaken. That part is talking about putting the strings together. Akesha, Yisa, the right. Anyway, look into the Mishnah Brewer. You see what he says. That it's not really a total heta. You're absolutely right, but you have to know when it applies, when it doesn't. I certainly, many times in the rabbinate of Maitlis Orange, had to apply the concept, you shogging you and the rabbinate, you know what I'm talking about. All right. Yeah. All right, thank you for the comment. Until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you so much for honoring me with your presence. Jack, your name came up. I was Menachem Mavel. My friend Harold Neustadter lost his wife, Betty. And I walked in, and who jumps on me? The rabbi who, Ani Rund. And his wife is Rabbi Rund, and his wife, I never met her before. It's the first time I met her. And she says, you're Rabbi Kefet, oh, the Levensteins are always talking about you. So, wow, I said, no, Baruch Hashem. I said, I'm only Rabbi Kefet when I give Shia. Now I'm just a simple citizen of the Jewish people. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.